Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital. As you all know, 76 Capital is a venture capital company that invests in passionate, smart, and nice entrepreneurs who are launching game-changing tech startups across sports, media, and the entertainment industries. And on this show, I have the opportunity to interview top sports entrepreneurs, executives, and athletes who are shaping and many times changing the overall sports business landscape. You can subscribe to our show on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on our 76 Capital website. Well, let's get right to it. Today, my guest in studio at 76 Capital is Bill Thomas. Bill is the president of Mid-Atlantic Strategic Solutions, a full-service government affairs and political advocacy firm based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And you're going to hear why what Bill has done and what he's doing is so important across the overall gaming industry, the sports betting industry. And I'm really excited to have Bill as our guest today. So Bill, welcome to our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you because, you know, over the years, we've had the opportunity to see each other, talk. You know, we have a bunch of mutual friends across the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, right? But you've played such an important, unique role with gaming in general and how it's come to the state. Maybe you could share a little bit of that background.
No, absolutely. And again, I appreciate it. It's odd for me to be included in the same breath as some, you know, athletes and tech entrepreneurs. But, you know, I'm passionate about what government's role is in most of the things that we do every day. And then in sports and sports betting and all the elements of gaming is part of that. So yeah, I had the privilege to work for a phenomenal state representative, Rosita Youngblood, just, you know, down the road in Germantown, Philadelphia. And at that time, I was able to kind of really get involved in gaming. Casino style gaming, cut my teeth on, you know, really looking at, you know, in 2009 when table games came into Pennsylvania. In 2010, I started working more specifically with the Gaming Oversight Committee, really looking at what the next wave of gaming, what the future of gaming was in Pennsylvania. At that time, Pennsylvania was relatively new to the casino scene and kind of exploded to success. Former governor Rendell had a vision, and it was a brilliant vision, and it really has come to fruition now. And I had the privilege to kind of work through iGaming, which led into kind of what was happening in fantasy sports and what was happening in sports betting and New Jersey and their lawsuits, and it really kind of allowed Pennsylvania to kind of take a look at it from a very unique approach, prepare itself for when we all knew sports betting was going to be overturned, and then jump right into the space.
Well, it's really fascinating. I mean, all the conversations we've always had about this, it's like, you know, you were ahead of the game, right? I mean, you know, everyone, and including me, we talk about PASPA, May 14th of 2018, sure. The Supreme Court strikes down this law that says you can only have sports betting in the state of Nevada, and then the floodgates open, right?
Right.
But the floodgates that opened, the reason they were able to open, and a lot of things that happened, was a lot of the work that you and others did prior to 2018.
Absolutely. And so, you know, the big date for us was November of 2017. The end of October, coming into November, we passed a massive gaming expansion bill in Pennsylvania. But even prior before that, 2013, we introduced the first iGaming bill in Pennsylvania, kind of modeled after what New Jersey was doing after the feds made a little small change to say that you could wager online as long as the bet kind of initiates in the state that regulates it.
So real quick, you say iGaming, just
internet gaming.
So internet gaming, poker,
table games and slot machines online, whether on your phone or you know, anything based through the internet, that you could access those games on a platform through the internet. And, you know, 2013, we introduced the first bill. It was a 7-page bill. That was what it was, 7 pages. We just said, we're gonna do it. And then by the time October of 2017 rolls around, it's a 400-page bill. And you spoke about sports betting. You know, I had the privilege, again, to write that section of it, to kind of put a lot of myself into what do we want to do in this space. New Jersey was in the middle of the lawsuit. We know we didn't want to deregulate it. We didn't really want to take that chance. But we knew we wanted to do something. So we put a placeholder in there that said once PASPA is overturned, or once the federal government decides that they want to allow other states to get into sports betting, Pennsylvania could jump into the market right away. And that's when that section of law would take effect. And 6 months later, PASPA's overturned and Pennsylvania's right in the middle of it. And we didn't have to worry about, and you know, depending on where you, how you feel about certain aspects of it, but we were able to jump in mobile right away. So online, mobile sports betting, we didn't have to relitigate that in the halls of the Capitol in Harrisburg. Integrity fees, any of the issues that the leagues were having. You know, who gets a license? Is the France sports franchises like they did in Ohio? A lot of those things were settled before PASPA was overturned, and we were able to enter the market right away.
Now, I mean, that was a big deal for the Commonwealth, yes, to be able to do that. Were there other states or other individuals that you were talking to that were calling you or calling the state in quotes, I guess, like, and yeah, they could say, hey, like, what have you done? What are you doing? You know, because you were really early. Yeah.
And that's really, you know, one of the things that as a staffer, even a leadership staff person for the legislature is, you know, our members have to be versed in all types. You know, they're true to that, you know, jack of all trades, master of none is really what legislators, they have to know a lot about every issue that's before them. And so, you know, we were learning in 2013 and 2014 about iGaming. We were talking to folks mostly in Europe because that's where the experience was. You know, we held our first policy committee meeting in 2014 on iGaming. We had 14 people testifying. We had five panels. The Gaming Control Board came in and said, you could charge, you know, $400. This is what we see at national conferences, because we just wanted to get all that information. And as a staff person, we're drafting legislation. We know the impact it's going to have. It's either going to allow the industry to flourish while protecting the customer or dampen the opportunities. And so we were talking to folks, and the amount of information we were getting, you know, the one thing I always say is if you're lobbying or advocating or you're educating people on, you know, what your industry does, it's really important to do that, to talk to members and staff, because that's where we're getting our information. We're listening to people who are doing it. We're listening to the companies, and we're kind of juxtaposing that to what's in the best interest of the constituents. And so now that I'm on the other side of it, I'm a lobbyist myself. And, you know, I do as much as I can educate staff people and educate members about what's important to the industry, what's important to the constituents, and how we kind of merge that. But we were listening to everybody. I mean, it was Caesars and PokerStars, and, you know, we had, you know, folks from overseas who were dealing with problem gambling in Europe, and they were telling us that what things they're doing there, and, you know, trying to battle that. That's why a 7-page bill became 400 pages, you know?
Well, how did you, you know, find all of these experts, or did they find you?
A little bit of buzz. Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing they may have found you because of the size of Pennsylvania and the opportunity in the state, and it's as it was expected, it was going to be a state by state type situation. So Pennsylvania is a big player.
You know, we're close enough to New Jersey to know the players there and what was happening in New Jersey and some of the work that was being done there. You know, Pennsylvania has the big names, majority of big names in the casino world that have brick and mortar casinos in Pennsylvania. So they were talking to us. The big players were Caesars and Penn National and, you know, the Rivers properties. They were all coming to us and saying, look, this is what we see, what we envision. This is what we're doing in New Jersey. This is what we've done overseas. But at the same time, it was on us as staff people to research. And, you know, I could tell you one of the stories I have is arguing with the governor's office about tax rates. I lost. And so anyone out there in the industry, it was not me who had the high tax rates. But, you know, we were looking at a 14% tax rate on iGaming is what we were advocating for, because the research we saw coming from Europe was, you, in order to channel people from the illegal sites and getting them into the regulated market, which is what they want to do. People want to get into a safe, reliable, regulated market when it comes to gaming. You're less able to market to those folks and give them kind of the advantage or the betting opportunities that the offshore markets who are untaxed can do. So the higher the tax rate, the less you're going to channel people over. And so we argued with the governor's office about channelization. And I just kept providing study after study to the governor's office saying, look, we need to have lower tax rates. Now, you know, I look at it now and 34% has worked. It's working. Again, don't kill me in the industry, but you know, the tax rate of 34%, we're, you know, our biggest boom right now in Pennsylvania, because of some outside competition in the brick and mortars from some of these other gaming machines that might be out there. The competition, there really isn't that competition online. And so iGaming in Pennsylvania is where the real revenue drivers are. We were talking about sports betting just a bit ago. The numbers are staggering when you break it down as to how many folks are betting online compared to in the
retail. We'll share some of those numbers with us.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you look at sports betting in Pennsylvania, it's about a $7.2 billion in revenue. That's a $7.2 billion is what was, that was the handle. That's how much was wagered in Pennsylvania. The hold was roughly last year from in 22 to 23, about 10%, 9.5%. It's about $600 million. Taxes 32%. So the state's bringing in about $167 million, which when you compare that to what slots are doing, which is $1.2 to $1.5 billion in tax revenue alone, which is what puts Pennsylvania as the number one tax generating gaming state in the country. You know, it pales in comparison to what slots are able to do. But 93% of those wagers on sports betting online. 7% in the retail shops. So, you know, for us, again, we go back to 2014, 2015, when we started to look at what sports betting meant. We knew online had to be part of that, or we'd miss a huge market.
I mean, 93% of all bets online, on the phone, or mobile.
Absolutely.
I mean, so it's unbelievable to think about that. And that's such a huge number, mm-hmm. in such a large state. And what that really starts to make you think about what the future really is here.
Sure. And I'll say, I mean, you know, those numbers are staggering, right? You know, there is that part of me that looks at the brick and mortar and how do we protect the brick and mortars? Because that is where the investments really are. You know, 16,000 employees across Pennsylvania work at the casinos. We have the investments in hotels and restaurants and shops. So yes, I mean, the mobile side was really important for us as a state to not have to fight over that. Like New York has had to fight over it. Maryland's going through it now. And there are a lot of folks who are saying, look, Maryland, I mean, it's going to shift. So how do we protect the brick and mortars in Maryland? How do we protect the brick and mortars in Pennsylvania? To say that's where this, as a former staffer, and any member will tell you, they care about the jobs and they care about what's being built. The Union Hotel that's right. being built matters to Philadelphia, right? So, you know, you got to balance it a little bit. The numbers are staggering and it's important to be in the market, but you also have to look at those brick and mortars and what they really do for the Commonwealth.
But I think there's an opportunity,
sure.
from the industry perspective, from the brick and mortar side of the world, right? To look at where are those 93%, where are people doing this, right?
Yeah, right?
It's not just because you're on your phone, that means that you're in your home on the couch. You could be in one of these
absolutely.
Venues.
No, absolutely.
You could be in a sports bar.
Correct.
You could be
correct.
Out at a game. That's the tough thing. And the access to being able to bet on your mobile phone in large stadiums
sure.
is
sure.
still an issue across the country.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, I talk about a lot, and I still think that's it, there's so much missed opportunity mm-hmm. when you have 70,000-100,000 people in a stadium and you can't get your bet in.
Right.
Right. That's still an issue today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So imagine what the numbers will look like when you get that figured out. Right.
Right. Right. So, I mean, it's and really it's about, you know, when we were doing the legislation, a lot of it, and just to be honest, it was a placeholder, right? We gave a lot of authority to the Gaming Control Board from the regulatory side because we just didn't know what the legislation would look like or should look like. So we did the basic bones of it. We put some ideas in there. We were talking about earlier. I really wanted our off-track wagering locations to have access to a book because we were trying to help the racing industry. You know, I was come from a racing family of, you know, my dad was a big kind of horse racing guy. And, you know, how do we help those out? And it didn't work out the way that we had planned. So there are some missteps that we took along the way. But, you know, I think when you look at those bones, we gave a lot of authority to the Game Control Board, who was figuring it out as they were going along as well. And I think it's important to say, like, you know, you look at, you know, Philadelphia, the sports complex is down there. You have, you know, you have the casino, live casino right there. There is an automatic relationship with those venues and the casino. And how do you continue to work on that and build that? How do you bring people in that might be on their phone wagering their phone, but they get a credit to a restaurant? Or how do you build that database and continue to do it? And I think you're right. I think being able to wager within the stadium is something that, you know, needs to be revisited and something that needs to be allowed.
Look, we all like to be around each other, right? It's great to have you here in our 76 Capital studio, actually doing this live, right? So people enjoy being in, you know, next to each other, right? The whole thing about, you know, whether it's iGaming or whether it's, you know, just placing bets on sports. I mean, it's become more social than ever before. Right. So it's not just this thing where people are doing off by themselves. It's something that they're doing with others. They're sharing their ideas, their wins, sometimes their losses, right? They'll talk about these things. Like, and it's that's something that's a new phenomenon that's happening right now.
Right. And that's why you see, you know, media companies or your folks getting involved in the sports betting scene. I was just down at York College down in York County, Pennsylvania, talking to the sports management students there, and I said,
look, I gave a commencement address there.
Did you really? That's great. Yeah, it's a small school, but beautiful. They're doing wonderful things. Their sports management program is doing some great things, and I had the opportunity just to share with them, look, if you're getting into sports management, anything to do with sports, and you're not thinking about sports betting or understanding the impacts that sports betting is having on just the sports industry as a whole, and really just our cultural existence as a whole, then you're missing the boat. And I think, you know, again, seeing media companies like ESPN and all, you know, we're talking a little bit about some other things that were announced today and just kind of showing up. I think, look, those are, it's being integrated into everything that we're doing. And it started, honestly, it started with fantasy sports. Let's not forget that DraftKings, those commercials and that their aggressiveness, FanDuel, early on, before PASS was overturned, before states were even looking at sports betting, it loosened, I think, the public's opinion of sports betting, right? That it is more social. It is, you know, the commercials were guys and girls, you know, high-fiving each other after winning $1 million DFS, right? That's the culture that sports betting is. It may, and it's going to continue that. It's no longer, you know, parlay cards from a bookie, right? Where you're kind of there like alone. It's right. Definitely more social. Which brings its own concerns as a regulatory entity, as states need to look at, it is more social. So what are we doing with influencers? What are we doing with folks that are on these social media sites that are pushing parlays and pushing in, right? That's another aspect that governments are going to look at and say, are we protecting our consumers? Are we protecting our constituents? And before it becomes a problem where government can get in the way, and I totally believe that government can help or can get in the way. We don't want them getting in the way. What are some things that companies can do to kind of ease the burden on legislatures that might be looking at problem gambling? They might be looking at, I mean, the statistics on college campuses are not good for this, but there is a black eye to the sports betting world. It's the amount of college kids who are now betting on sports. And there is a need for some services there, addiction services, whatever. But the industry has always been committed to that. And so they need to continue to be committed to that and bring some of the operators in that are kind of in this space and make sure that they're committed to it as well.
Well, I think this is a perfect segue to really get into, you know, what you're doing now, right? Okay. You know, as president of Mid-Atlantic sure. Strategic Solutions, I mean, you have, again, had this really unique opportunity, and you were there, you were writing the bills, you were, you know, in the, making the sausage, as they would say back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And here you are now running this organization that works with casinos and sports books and is providing education and others and just anything else that you can to the legislators today. So talk about like what's happening now, some of the things that you're doing and what you're excited about across the future.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, the Gaming Act in Pennsylvania really only opens up once every 6 or 7 years. It's not something the legislature likes to do. Because there's a lot of components. It's very complex, very complicated. with regard to tax revenue and local communities that get money. So there's a lot of things that, you know, and I'll just one anecdote, if you don't mind,
please.
You know, when we were looking at iGaming and we were looking at sports betting and we're looking at all like, is this something that the state needs to get into? We see New Jersey, we see all some other states doing it. You know, the legislature wasn't really banging on the door to do it. They were looking at it. We were researching it. We were putting some bills together, but it wasn't until a lawsuit from one of the casinos in the northeast part of the state about a tax revenue piece that goes to local communities that they said was not uniform and unfair. The courts threw that tax out and the legislature had 6 months to fix it, or they would lose, communities would lose millions of dollars in funding. And the legislature then said, leadership was like, let's look at this iGaming stuff. We might want to open the gaming act because we have to fix this. So, you know, opportunities come up, and what we're working on now, I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure, yeah, and it is a national issue. There are some other states who are dealing with kind of this proliferation of gaming outside of casino walls. We call it distributed gaming. It deals with, you know, video gaming terminals, but also skill-based gaming, which, you know, in Pennsylvania has been kind of the epicenter of the fight over skill games. The courts have ruled that it's not technically gambling, and therefore it's unregulated. The casinos, obviously, it's a big threat to the brick and mortar casino industry. And as I talked earlier, that's where the jobs are. That's where the revenue is. Property tax relief for Pennsylvanians come from the brick and mortars. So we're working on a lot of that now, trying to get, you know, educate members on, you know, what does a regulated environment look like with games that may not be technically, according to the courts, gambling. How do you regulate that? Do you tax it? You know, all of the similar issues that we deal with, problem gambling, you know, we've seen a spike in calls to the problem gambling hotline that the Gaming Control Board runs, with people saying, look, I'm addicted to these skill machines. That's a concern and should be a concern. So how do we regulate it? How do we bring it under the Gaming Control Board, make sure the games have integrity? You know, and then what does that mean for some of those online games that live in that space as well? So
I think one thing would be really interesting to talk about is share why regulation in the gaming industry is so important as compared to whether it's a skill-based game, whether it's a, you know, playing a sports book, you know, that's overseas somewhere that you don't know who they are, but like why is it important, you believe, that regulation is the key to this?
I think it's just you want a safe and reliable place to play. We look at gambling, or I look at gambling, as an entertainment offering that does have some consequences to it. We can't fool ourselves that there are people who are addicted to gambling, and we need to address that. About $4 to $5 million a year comes out of the casino coffers and goes to problem gambling treatment, and also goes to drug and alcohol treatment, because they are addicted personalities are linked. But for me, it's about bringing, as we talked about, channeling people off of unregulated sites, because the consumer wants to be able to know that when they make a bet, that there's someone there making sure that players aren't on the take, that there are some integrity value to that, and that I'm going to get paid at the end of the day. If I win my bet, I have a recourse to get my winnings. You know, we looked at some of the black market poker games early on in the early 2000s. I mean, people lost hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars when some offshore sites folded and got raided by the federal government. So, you know, we want to protect the consumer. The other part of that is, you know, it's really has the opportunity without the eyes and ears on, you know, in the brick and mortar, it's easier. You have cameras, you have everything online. Every bet is tracked. Every bet is recorded when you're in a regulated environment, so that reduces money laundering. It limits unsavory characters. You have to have integrity to get into the market when you're in a regulated environment. It's vital. You look at skill games now, I think you have the ability to look at the unintended consequences of gambling. And there are, as I said, unintended consequences. You have to be able to protect the consumer. You have to be able to protect folks who get addicted to gambling. Do we want gaming machines, money in, money out, for the opportunity to win large sums of money in laundromats? I don't think we do, right? We want them in regulated environments. We want them in Burger Kings. They're in Burger Kings.
Burger Kings, laundromats, for real.
For real. And because it is this gray market, this unregulated market. And look, to the credit of the skill games companies, they have won court cases. The Commonwealth Court has ruled that these machines, according to their assessment, they're slot machines, but they're not regulated by the state. So therefore, they're kind of unregulated.
So we've been talking about the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, states, right? And state by state, right? Every, you know, it's been this unbelievable run-up where 38 states have, you know, legalized sports betting. We're at now, what, 7 states for iGaming, I believe?
Yeah, so we're a little bit more. It might be at like, I think somewhere between 7 and 10 states. Right.
That are on the 30, that have iGaming.
38 states in sports betting, 37, you said.
Right, yeah. So like we're in the middle of this with DC. I mean, like it's fascinating what's happened. So it's now almost all the way across the United States.
Correct.
So we're still waiting on Texas and California to see what goes down over the next couple of years there. And Florida's sort of figuring out what their world's all about. But those are three really big states that haven't fully come in yet. Mm-hmm. Florida's the furthest along, I guess, with those three. But the question that I get all the time is, why is it state by state? Why isn't there a federal bill? Why isn't there federal oversight? Where's the, you know, like we talk about our company, US Integrity, and Odds On Compliance, mm-hmm. and what they do and how they make sure that everything's on the up and up, and in a way act like the SEC of sports betting and gaming across the country, because there is no federal SEC. Will there ever be one, or what do you think about all that?
So I think, you know, from what, you know, kind of backtracking to like why there isn't a federal component to this or federal gaming law and state by state, it's because the states that were involved in it early on were pretty powerful. You know, Nevada had some leadership in the, and they were able to kind of have the monopoly. Atlanta, New Jersey is a similar way. I think as you have more states getting into it, more states looking at it, more states building upon what, you know, the initial few states had in terms of regulated gambling, you might see more of a push from the federal level. But, you know, this is one of those issues, and why New Jersey was able to win the court case along. It's a states' rights issue, right? And I think anything not specifically enumerated in the Constitution is left to the state. So, you know, maybe if you start to see more states kind of entering in, like you say, once you get the, you know, bigger states getting into it, maybe you'll see federal oversight. But what's unique in each of those states is the interests that are in those states. You know, California, the tribal gaming in California is a huge issue,
right?
And that's important.
Right.
To gaming in California. You know, Pennsylvania did not have any recognized tribes in Pennsylvania. So our gaming, when we initiated gaming, it was easier for the state to say it's ours, right? We're going to manage it. We're going to regulate it. We didn't have to, you know, to compromise or work with, you know, any other entity. The state was able to say it's ours. So I think those local interests in each state also impact what's going to happen at the federal level. How do you rectify tribal gaming at a federal level when they're sovereign, right? So that's another big part of it to probably to answer that question.
There's a lot of different pieces to all that. And it's tough. And I think that it's interesting, you know, we're having this conversation on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. You know, Bill, you have been and are one of the leaders across really being out there and helping, you know, build this industry and helping, you know, literally write the law of the state that has the most gaming revenue out there. So when you think about leadership, you know, what does that word mean to you as the president of your company today, as someone who's been having to lead, you know, and help lead your, you know, the legislators that you worked for at the time, like really kind of help move them forward? What does leadership really mean to you?
I was the product of some members of the House and Senate in Pennsylvania to allow me the freedom to do that, right? That doesn't often happen. So leaders within the Pennsylvania legislature, and there's legislatures across the country, right? The ability to look at new things and not be afraid of it, but to start tackling those issues. And I had the freedom from the member I worked for to go and do the research and talk to as many people as I could. And, you know, part of that is understanding, knowing what I didn't know and being able to, you know, again, we talked about it, you know, the amount of difference of opinions you get and people saying, you know, you have, we talked about iGaming, you have one company saying anybody with tainted assets who might have bought, you know, a poker company that failed or got raided by the government should never be allowed to get a license in Pennsylvania. And then that same company who then bought the assets saying, you're going to lose 60% of the market share if you don't let us get a license. So how do you balance that? How, like, what are you going to do? Right. So you have to be able to, you know, and it's awkward for me to hear you say some of the things you say about being a leader in the space, because I worked for people who were the leaders. Right. But I appreciate that, because it does take someone to take a look at it, sit back, not have an agenda, but just to look at it from what's in the best interest of the state, what's in the best interest of the industry and the consumers and the constituents. You know, I even kind of take that now in the companies that I represent. When I go back to talk to the staff people that are in my role that I was in that are there now, you know, I tell them I kind of can wear two hats. I take one off and I'll talk to you as someone in your position. It may not always be what my client wants me to say, and I apologize if they're watching this, but I'm there to talk. And leadership is about talking things through and getting those people to a point of like, here's where we need to be. And then this is why it's beneficial. You know, we're having those conversations right now. Governor Shapiro put in his budget a tax on skill games, a tax on kind of distributed gaming. And what does that mean? And I'm in the halls of the legislature talking to as many people as I can to say, if you're going to do that, you have to consider the impacts on brick and mortars. And I would have said that when I was in the building working for the legislators, because I truly believe that. You know, anytime we change gaming, we got to look at what the impacts are on the ones that are hiring the people and investing the millions of dollars, building the hotels, and making really what brought Pennsylvania to the gaming, you know, peak that we are now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the one thing that we believe is, you know, at 76 is there really is this convergence between the physical worlds and the digital worlds.
Absolutely.
And the digital side is the new technology. And it's how do you use that in physical settings as well as, you know, sort of on your own in your with your own phone. So when you, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, as we sort of wind up our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show here, is that, you know, we talked earlier about the new technologies, the new things that are now happening. As we're sitting here literally this morning, we find out that Apple comes out with their first Apple Sports app that has odds in it, that has all the information, and it's like literally native to your phone now, right? Sure. So what will that mean? What does it mean when you said earlier, ESPN, the worldwide leader of sports, has ESPN Bet, and next season will be their first full football season? You have FanDuel, DraftKings, you have Fanatics that hasn't had a full season really yet, right? with their partnership. What's going to happen with Bet365 and how they're coming into this world? BetMGM, right? There's like major players. What, you know, where's Caesars in all this? How are they going to play with this? Because then they make a move yesterday and buy WinBets, stuff. So like, what's going to go on, and where do you see the tech taking us?
I think the integration.
That wasn't too much on that question. I mean, I didn't really.
We'll solve all of the problems right here.
I'll give you 2 minutes.
Absolutely. No, but look, I think, like, there's so much. I mean, there's so many players. And, you know, when you talk about what, you know, we have unlimited skins in Pennsylvania, right? We allow these partnerships to work because we know technology is going to continue to change and evolve. So you have folks like Penn National and Live, and, you know, Rivers has their own product, but they're able to partner with these operators and have multiple facets of that, right? Because the customers are going to go with who they trust and who they, the ease of the app and all of that. So, you know, I think Pennsylvania did it right when we opened it up. We're not going to limit the number of skins. We're not going to limit who you can market with, who you can partner with, because we know it's going to continue to change. And whether that was brilliance in, you know, we're going to be open to it, or we just didn't know and just said we're going to leave it up to what happens in the future. But all of that is to say, you know, there are, again, and there are things that we need to be worried about. I think ESPN, and in their multiple channels and their multiple ability to push narratives and stories, we need to make sure that that isn't influenced or influencing or being influenced by sports betting. Although, again, that convergence is something that legislators and the companies need to consider. What is government's role in that? We don't want them in there, but we talked earlier, you know, sports betting's at 34% in Pennsylvania. Fantasy sports is at 15% tax rate in Pennsylvania, because DraftKings and FanDuel came to us before regulation and said, we want to be regulated. Here's how we'll help you regulate us. And that matters to people drafting legislation. So talk, you know, my one pitch is, you know, work with companies that can get you access to the legislators to be able to talk about your issues before they become an issue, right? Before they, you know, they, you know, things start to blow out of control. What are some things government can do to help you kind of make your case to folks who can literally stop you what you're doing?
So how can our viewers and listeners find you, Bill?
You know, LinkedIn, Bill Thomas. You can also reach out, MinuteLandingSS.com is my website. My company is a subsidiary of a firm in Harrisburg, McNeese, Wallace and Nurek. So you can find me at McNeeseLaw.com as well. I'm on all the social medias. Bill KDR is my handle on social media. So reach out, and if we can be helpful, we'd love to be helpful. And Wayne, I appreciate everything you're doing, everything 76 is doing. You know, we didn't even talk about esports, which is another kind of one of those areas.
Got to come back.
We were first introduced, and that's a whole nother aspect of where government can hurt or help. You know, so I think, you know, I appreciate everything you're doing and 76 is doing. Some of the companies you're working with are doing, you know, some great work in this space and making our job easier and the legislators' job easier, because you're building something that is necessary and it's exciting.
Well, so thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you coming on our show. We'll love to have you back to talk about all these issues, because literally on a daily basis, there's something new happening. So this was Bill Thomas.
And real quick, there will be a gaming bill this year.
In Pennsylvania.
We will have an expanded, the governor was looking to regulate skill games. So if anybody has any ideas on how to make the Gaming Act better, reach out and maybe we can represent you to make that happen.
So talk to Bill Thomas, the president of Mid-Atlantic Strategic Solutions. He's the guy who really was there at the beginning, helping make this all happen across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.